Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate that to all of the veterans who are buried under the Mount Soledad Memorial Cross, which was taken down by the communists and was not allowed to be put up again by a court order of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who should be disbanded and exiled. I got this because I wanted to find out what's the closest town that has accommodations to that site. And that town is La Jolla, or La Jolla, J-O-L-L-A. Nearest airport is San Diego Airport, in case you want to go out there and say a prayer. And this is a response from the chairman and CEO of the Mount Soledad Memorial Organization. He says, "By now you will all have heard the news that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the most anti-American court in the country, and that's where the ACLU runs all their cases for victory, and it's got to be disbanded, and it's got to be just disbanded. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has once again ruled that the cross on Mount Soledad is unconstitutional. When is a cross unconstitutional? This is certainly disappointing news to those families who have lost loved ones in the Korean conflict and the many others who have honored their veteran with a plaque on the memorial walls. More importantly, this is not the end of the line. Now that the federal government owns the cross, this issue will be decided on the basis of the federal constitution, not the California constitution as in the past. That means that there is a likelihood that the Supreme Court will ultimately hear and decide this case. You will see in the press that we continue to reiterate that our association's mission is to honor veterans. The memorial walls, the plaques, the flagpole, the bollards, and our many activities honoring veterans at the site are not in any way threatened by this ruling, Moreover, the court stated in its ruling that simply because there is a cross or a religious symbol on public land does not mean that there is a constitutional violation. But this Ninth Circuit Court has got to go. It's got to be disbanded. It is likely, it's their own little government. It is likely to be quite some time before this issue was settled once and for all. In the meantime, we will carry on as usual with our daily activities at the site and will enthusiastically maintain our focus on honoring veterans. I asked if the cross was still up and is the cross back up, and I didn't get a conclusive answer. I assume it's not. How are you, boys and girls? Welcome to the Spirit of America Party. Are you seeing all the Hail Fellows well met in the House and the Senate? They're all getting ready to do the grind at the State of the Union message. And John McCain is already saying that Osama bin Laden is one of the greatest presidents in the world, and he's a real American. Yeah. John McCain has been a senator over Bleeding Arizona since Pancho Villa wore knickers. But what is Arizona today? Nothing but a shipping hub for drugs to be disseminated throughout the land. That is his legacy of failure. Never once in his time of office did he try and stop the drugs from coming into and through Arizona. So, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to drug fighting, McCain gets an F, and it's not for fighting. Yeah. So, he can't close the border, but he will tell you what you want to hear. McCain's good friend, Russell Feingold, is a flag burner and a baby killer. That means he votes to kill full-term kids. And that means that 40 days before 9/11, he voted to let the American flag burn. And while we're on the subject, let me just tell you this. Democrats unite to the man. They will never break and join other ranks. When the word comes out, kill the kids, they will all vote to kill the kids. And when the word comes out, burn the flag, they will all vote to burn the flag. They are party over country people. Re-puppies, they're all over the lot. And so we got Russell Feingold, and then we have McCain's best friend, Ted the Chappaquiddick Seal Kennedy, who drove more than one woman to drink and in the drink. But now God is good, and he's working boiler number three. I paid my dues for John getting the Hanoi Jane Fonda workout. And he did. He got the Jane Fonda workout. And she made a million on the tapes. Right? She got a pass when she should have been in Fort Leavenworth in a padded cell for life for being a traitor. I paid my dues to John getting the Hanoi Jane Fonda workout, but it's time to go, John. Ride off into the sunset and make way for a teabagger. And take Match McConnell with you. He also voted with 47 senators to burn the flag. John didn't, but Match did. And I'll tell you another one who did. And they passed him off as a conservative, which goes, you can't trust either party. Either party, they cover up their fair-haired boys. Fred Thompson voted to burn the flag, and they put him up as a presidential candidate. Okay, of course, the Democrats all vote to burn the flags, no exceptions. The only one that didn't vote to burn the flag, this one will shock you. There's only one Democrat that didn't vote to burn the flag, even though she votes to kill kids. And that's the one from California, Dianne Feinstein. And I think the reason she can't burn that flag is because she's got blood in the family that was spilled on a battlefield. That's my hunch. And that's why she doesn't burn that flag. But the others, they don't care. Democrats don't care. That should be their slogan. Okay. So when John McCain rides into the sunset, he should take Match McConnell with him and take the Cauldron Sisters of Maine. If those two are Democrats, and that's what they are, they're not Republicans, Snowjob, Olympia Snowjob and Collins, if they're Maine Republicans, then close the party headquarters and retreat to New Hampshire while it is still free. Massachusetts RNC can close also. We saw the closet Democrat. I knew he was no good when he used his champagne party to launch his daughter's horrible singing career. I thought it was opening night on Laughing. Savage called Scott a Democrat right out of the chute. The Republicans are now sitting in Democrat laps on Kissing Ass Day, which begins with Lazarus Obama's State of the Mess address. My friends, this guy is on a 2-minute football drill to take this country down. He is not stopping. He is unstoppable. He will play the shell game with you. And when you pick the wrong shell, he's going to clobber you. The biggest mistake is that we did not dump more communists. Now Obama bin Laden, who McCain calls a great American. Yeah, so is Ho Chi Minh when you draw the queen of diamond demons, Hillary. And the reason Sarah Palin is attacked so hard and so unreasonable is that the media clones have been told the presidency is reserved for the Wicked Witch of Chappaqua, who expects nothing less than to be drafted by popular acorn-like demand. America, you have no idea how vulnerable we are and ripe for a takeover. That is why the Communist Party of North America wants your gun, because they have things planned to do to you that no normal American would allow. Pretty soon, they will run out of legal maneuvers to destroy this country, and then Plan C, as in communist, goes into effect. House arrest and super labeling. Wait till you meet Obama's army, larger than the U.S. Army. Your biggest regret will be you did not buy more guns. And by the way, in a communist cucumber high school in Brooklyn, the Pledge of Allegiance was recited over the loudspeaker system. You're going to hear this twice tonight. Guess how many students in the library stood up to say the pledge? 1 out of 40. Wait till the one loses heart. You lost your country and you're never getting it back. To the parents who are upset about drug testing sixth graders, don't worry, children cannot testify against their parents. In a very good high school in New Jersey, you'll hear this twice tonight too, 176 students are in rehab. Peter King, the congressman from Long Island, who we counted on, wants protection for politicians. And nobody asked the question why there wasn't one cop around that 9-year-old girl who the media treated like a pro-choice fetus. How did you like that Democrat Paul Wellstone rally? It could be worse. They could have offered human sacrifices, like bin Laden did on 9-1-1 after he got the Clinton invitation, RSVP 1993. Get rid of the Republicans before you go after the communists. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Wait till the communist stuntmasters arrest and seize the weapons of a well-known conservative on some trumped-up charge. On that day, if you do not stand, shout, and scream holy hell, you will be next. In the words of Ben Franklin, gentlemen, if we don't hang, he means stick, together, surely we will all hang separately. Okay, so having said, read you those two pieces, I'm going to read you one more. We'll break for a tune, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to read you the Red Cocaine Story, Chapter 6, The Infiltration of the U.S. Military in Vietnam. Co-op and condo owners in New York got the shaft from Bloomberg, and school mothers get ridiculed. This just happened in the last couple of days. We never should have allowed this Sultan to buy a third term after he denied Giuliani a third term. He is building a treasure chest on the backs of his subjects. The word out yesterday was real estate values in New York City have increased at 3%. So Mayor and Imam of Bloomingdale proposes that the serfs can pay, you ready for this, 7.5% real estate taxes on a condo, on a co-op, and 9% on a condo. What he is really saying is, I got everybody by the shorts, and you're helpless to do anything but pay. But it gets even worse. His prima donna appointment for school chancellor, was talking down at a school parents meeting. And jokingly, the topic was the schools are overcrowded. And she jokingly suggested that the mothers who were complaining about school overcrowding should practice birth control. I guess that includes abortions in chop shops named after Congress mice and senators. After kicking working, not appointed, mothers down, she took the cheapest shot of all. She recommended Sophie's Choice. No sign of the JDL to object to blood libel. They only go after mothers who have handicapped children with their anti-Semite label machine. But this sarcastic Nazi bitch, in my excellent opinion, gets a liberal elitist pass. If you ever saw the movie Sophie's Choice, you would boil up in your seat, because the story is about a Jewish mother of two children, a boy and a girl, and an SS camp commandant tells Sophie one of her children must be exterminated, and then the fiend makes her choose the child that will live. I pray that a court order keeps this Bloomingdale Mengele appointee from ever coming within a mile of a kindergarten. She should be removed immediately from her political party post and asked to leave the country and take the mayor with her. Look at what we have become as a nation. Look who is minding the kids. In a Brooklyn high school this past week, the Pledge of Allegiance was broadcast over the school intercom. In the school library, only one student out of 40 stood to pay his respects to his country. In a top-quality high school in New Jersey, 176 students are in drug rehab. You lost your country, you're never getting it back. Already people are taking Mandarin lessons. More tea, anybody? Welcome to the Spirit of America Party radio show, and special thanks to Steve Malzberg for playing the audio clips of Obersturmfuhrer Black. Watch out, her and Bloomy don't run into the 911 Jihad Victory Mosque for sanctuary. We'll take a break, and when I come back, we will read you Red Cocaine. Don't think this war with the communists is over. It is not. It's just beginning. And tonight, they're in Tunisia. We're covering the book Red Cocaine, and we have read five chapters so far, and they're all up in the archives if you ever want to check them out. Chapter one was the Chinese drug offensive that began in 1928 with Mao Zedong. Then chapter two was the Soviets, watching the progress of the Chinese, decided to do the same thing in Europe, and they got involved. And then it was the Soviets, with the help of Fidel Castro, that built the Latin American drug network. In chapter four, Khrushchev instructs the satellite countries on getting into the game. And chapter five was organizing the drug routes, and it had a Russian name, Druzhba Naradov. And chapter six is what we're doing tonight, political warfare and drugs in Vietnam. So here we go. China and the Soviet Union competed for the drug business of U.S. servicemen during the Vietnam War. The Chinese dimension of this trafficking represented an extension of what they had learned in the early 50s, not only in the Korean War, but in the French Indochina War as well. During the Indochina War, which culminated with the defeat of the French at Dien Bien Phu, the Chinese worked with the Vietnamese communists to promote a drug use by French troops. The tactic was even more successful in Indochina than it had been in Korea. In January 1954, the French Lieutenant General Cogny explained to an American Army operations officer, Malloy Vaughan, that drugs from China were having a serious effect on the morale of the French combat units, and the growing use of drugs among French soldiers was also eroding support from the war back home in France. One of the chief distribution centers, you see all these wars, they collapse when the people back home abandon the troops. If you're not going to support them, don't send them. One of the chief distribution centers was the Chinese gambling city of Cholon, a suburb of Saigon, where the troops went for rest and recreation. Prostitutes there were especially effective in pushing drugs on the French servicemen. I'll tell you one thing I seen at the beginning of the war in Vietnam. As soon as I seen them opening up recreation centers in Vietnam, I said, that's a big mistake. Everybody should be rotated out of Vietnam, and no money should be spent anywhere in Vietnam by American troops. R&R should be out of the country. It should be you're in a war zone, and that's all it is a war zone. This was the first time that the French had run into this use of drugs. Lieutenant Colonel Cogny explained to Vaughan that the effects of trafficking were proving to be extremely serious. Not only had drugs upset morale and fighting efficiency, but additionally many soldiers were too ashamed to return to France, instead had elected to be discharged in Indochina, where they remained, which had a further debilitating effect on morale. According to Soviet intelligence in 1957, the Soviets kill a lot of people without firing a shot. You remember that. Right now they're killing American troops. And so are the Chinese. At the third meeting of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese decided to expand their narcotics offensive. This expansion was designed as part of the Great Leap Forward. And we thought they were just chasing sparrows around so they couldn't land and would die from exhaustion from eating farmers' seeds. The principal subject discussed at the meeting was the economy. The decision to expand drug production was adopted as one solution to China's economic problems. In the decision document, and don't think they don't enjoy capitalism, they're going to use it to kill us all. The principal subject discussed at the meeting was the economy. The decision to expand drug production was adopted In the decision document, one paragraph reviewed the Chinese experience in Indochina and explained that drug trafficking was beneficial because it had undermined the morale of French troops, had introduced combat weakness, and had provided the Chinese with a significant profit. The decision was now made to expand opium poppy farms by 100% and similarly to double research and production activities. To further ease economic problems, instructions were sent out to have immigrants invest in business in China and support China's policy and interests, including the marketing of drugs and narcotics, and the primary targets were Mexico, the United States, and Canada. In addition to stated economic objectives, there was another motivation of particular importance from a U.S. perspective: preparation for the growing U.S. military presence in Vietnam. As Chou En-lai explained in 1958 during a pep talk he delivered at a meeting in Wuhan to discuss increasing opium production, the center had decided to promote poppy cultivation on a large scale. Every one of you must awake to the fact that the war in Vietnam is likely to escalate, and U.S. imperialism has determined to fight against our revolutionary camp by increasing its military force in Vietnam. So they seen us coming before we even got the idea. From the revolutionary point of view, the poppy is a great force to assist the course of our revolution and should be used. From the class point of view, the poppy can also become a powerful weapon to win the proletarian revolution. And that's why you got all kinds of potheads and dopeies in this country today. They can all handle it until they die on the toilet. By exporting large quantities of morphine and heroin, we are able to weaken the U.S. combat force and to defeat it without even fighting at all. I got to tell you, when I was in Germany in 1958, we carried gas masks and an atropine injection in the event that we get attacked with nerve gas. The atropine shot would neutralize the effects of the nerve gas. Do you know how many of those gas masks used to turn up empty without the atropine shot? And that was drug use on a small scale. Chow's observations, and you know what? A lot of guys that took those shots didn't know what kind of effect they were going to have. They were shooting crap with their lives. Chow's observations on what was likely to happen in Vietnam was not without justification. Following the Korean armistice, U.S. shipments of military equipment headed to Korea was rerouted to Vietnam to support the French operation. And I see tonight that some of the rifle boys are complaining that Obama just signed a bill or an executive order. He didn't even run it through the Congress to stop 1 million M1 Garands from coming back from Korea that were never used in the Korean War. I wonder where they'll end up. Simultaneous, the U.S. military presence in South Vietnam began to expand. By 1957, the steady increase in U.S. military personnel in South Vietnam was clear to the people at the headquarters of the U.S. Pacific Command, who were responsible for war plans. Indeed, 57 was the year that the first war plans for U.S. forces in Vietnam were developed. Given the highly successful use of drugs against the French troops in Nam, the success of the Chinese in promoting drug usage by U.S. forces in Korea, Chow's remarks should come as no reply, as surprise. Chow's observation at the 58 meeting, this is something, man. Chow's observation at the 58 meeting were remarkably consistent with reports on his discussions with President Gamal Abdel Nasser during a visit to Egypt 7 years later in 1965 at a banquet given in his honor. Chow is reported to have said, "We think that U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War provides a good chance for us to fight against U.S. imperialism. Thus, the more troops it sends to Vietnam, the more satisfied we are. At present, U.S. servicemen are experimenting with opium eating, and we are helping them in this respect. We have already grown the best quality opium for them. We will use opium to shatter the morale of U.S. troops in Vietnam, and the effects on the United States will indeed be beyond prediction. The Soviets and Czechs were rather well informed about Chinese trafficking, both through Soviet intelligence in China and North Korea and through intelligence collecting in Nam, Laos, Burma, Afghanistan, where Czechoslovak agents were assisted by the North Vietnamese, Laotians, Burmese, Cambodians, and Afghans. So back then, the Afghans were pumping drugs. The development of Soviet intelligence capabilities in China, specifically oriented to the drug trade, was the product of a long-term recruitment operation. Even before Mao Zedong came to power in 1949, the Soviets had become concerned about Mao's loyalties and had initiated measures to recruit spies among the Chinese communists. During the Korean War, these efforts were expanded, specifically to collect data on Chinese drug trafficking operations. As discussed earlier, the Soviets became extremely interested in the Chinese drug strategy during the Korean War, with effect from 1951 and continuing till 1962. A significant focus of Soviet espionage activity was to recruit spies to report on the Chinese drug business. Who makes a better spy than a junkie? Research, production, manufacturing techniques, distribution, and finance. Sejina, that's the Czechoslovak high-ranking officer who defected and brought this information, first learned of the Soviet espionage operation during a Defense Council meeting. How's that? The military's meeting and they're talking about drug distribution. Drug is a bomb. Dope is a bomb. While planning for a forthcoming visit by the Communist Party of Japan. It's an international movement, and they all have one goal, communism. In preparation for discussions with, you know what? I was surprised to learn. In Iraq, you know, when they were talking about we'll divvy it up into three different countries, or we'll do this, we'll do that, you know, we'll support the Shia over the Sunni. I asked a guy who was had a newspaper over there, which has since disappeared, which political party is the strongest? And he said the Sunni was strong. And then the Shia was second, and the Communist Party was third. In preparation for discussions with the visiting a delegation, a joint Ministry of Defense and the Interior report on political relations among the Chinese parties of Japan, China, and the Soviet Union were prepared for the Czechoslovak Defense Council. The drug business was one of the items covered in the report. The report described Chinese Soviet measures in which Czechoslovak intelligence participated to recruit Chinese spies. So you can see how they work, the Soviets. They undermine even their own people. They infiltrate their own people and keep an eye on everybody. That's where Big Brother is watching comes from, I guess, huh? The drug business was one of the items. They reported measures. I said that recruitment took place in China and the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, where numerous Chinese were temporarily stationed. The cadre of intelligence agents, you know what, and you see this recruiting and you see all the cadre and all of the agents, and you say to yourself, what's the CIA doing? What, do they hold up in Washington? Huh? They walked around Washington, D.C. for 8 years shouting, when is Bush going to get bin Laden? The targets of this recruitment operation were Chinese scientists, students, engineers, and technicians, whom the Soviets believe might go into some aspect of the drug business. Recruitment took place in China and in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. While China tried to hide its activities from the Soviets, by the late 50s, Soviet intelligence had identified 100 Chinese factories manufacturing heroin and drugs for use against the bourgeoisie. With their production capability today, can you imagine the amount of drugs they can pump out now? They also knew about new laboratories in Shanghai, Keitong, and Tibet, where synthetic drugs were prepared and tested. The Chinese also controlled factories in different countries which participated with China. The company, and they mentioned Chinese drug trafficking in Nam. The company also provided narcotics to various Middle East and African countries. This was, in fact, the source of much of the original Soviet intelligence on drug-related corruption in Africa and the Middle East. Through their agents, the Soviets were also alerted to the Chinese decision in 57 to expand their drug offensive. Hang in one second. I'm going to take a sip of something. By 58, the Soviets had grown concerned about the expansion of drug trafficking because of its possible adverse effects on Soviet plans. So these guys are competitors. By early 59, Chinese Minister of Defense, Marshal Peng Tehuai, was also a member of the Politburo, who was invited to tour the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe. During his visit, deficiencies in Chinese operation and collective farms were pointed out to him to make him appreciate the potential value of Soviet assistance and, of course, good faith. Then, midway through the visit, the subject of drugs and narcotics was raised. The Soviets suggested that the two countries and parties should coordinate their foreign policies. In particular, the Soviets suggested dividing up the drug market, with the Chinese getting Asia and Africa, and the Soviets taking the Americans and Europe. When the defense minister returned to China, he sent a personal letter to Mao criticizing some of Mao's policies and recommending certain improvements based on his visit to the Soviet Union. The letter was classified top secret because it discussed cooperation in foreign policy, military policy, and drugs. Not only did the suggestion fall on deaf ears, but Mao Zedong liquidated the defense minister, not for criticizing him, but rather for even acknowledging to the Soviets that China was in the drug business. So when you get liquidated, what does that mean? You get turned into a liquid? When the Chinese were first to recognize the potential for the use of drugs in Vietnam, the Soviets were not far behind. In 63, the Soviets had arranged for Czech intelligence to assist the North Vietnamese in setting up a training center for drug trafficking. In 64, when the school was in operation, the Soviets prevailed among the Czechoslovaks to negotiate an agreement with North Vietnam to produce narcotics and drugs in that country and ship the material via the Viet Cong and through Thailand to U.S. forces throughout Southeast Asia. They probably knew every American military base and the names of everybody and when they rotated home. The North Vietnamese were pleased with the arrangements finalized in 65. Among other considerations, as Sugino recalls, it put them in competition with the Chinese. The agreement within which the narcotics agreement was concealed dealt with the production of natural rubber. It was signed by Premier Pham Van Dong and Prime Minister Joseph Lennart. The details were worked out by the chiefs of North Vietnam and Czech military intelligence. Though intelligence sources and Truett's intelligence sources in China, who reported back through Czechoslovak agents stationed at their embassy in Peking, the Czechs learned that the Chinese had also expanded their narcotics trafficking operation in 64. Specifically, an agreement had been signed between the Communist Party of Japan and China in which the Japanese would assist China in supplying drugs to U.S. soldiers in Japan and Okinawa. Under the terms of the agreement, China's counterintelligence would perform background security checks on all Japanese who were scheduled to be recruited for this operation. In return for their assistance, the Communist Party of Japan was to receive 25% of the profits. Hey, moving forward, I see you're up on the chat. 1965, the Soviets expanded their Vietnam narcotics trafficking operations to ensure that drugs were available in nearby locations, which U.S. servicemen and officers would visit during R&R. One leg of this trafficking operation, in which the Czech intelligence assisted, there's no place on the earth that you can run or hide, was Australia. The Czechs were called upon to assist because they were able to operate in Australia more flexibly than the Soviets, and were not watched as closely as the Soviets. Wow. And the Czechs also had better relations with the Australians, particularly with the Labour Party, and had several commercial operations in Australia, which helped them provide cover. Finally, the Czechs had additional resources, namely Australian soldiers, whom the Czech intelligence services had recruited. The supply of drugs for this operation came from North Vietnam, which was another reason for Czech assistance, insofar as they were already involved with North Vietnam. In 65, the Czech chief of general staff had been criticized in a Soviet Defense Council report. The Soviet complaint was directed against the Czech intelligence service and accused it of placing more attention on profits than on the real objective of the drug business, which was the liquidation of capitalism. Two Czech officials were in Moscow attending a meeting when they were informed about this concern of the Soviet Defense Council and were told to change their priorities. The first priority was to promote drug usage, not to make money. The specific subject addressed was the use of drugs against U.S. military in Southeast Asia. How strong you think we were on the other side in the U.S. military? Were we watching out for our own boys? Did we realize what we were up against? Did we underestimate the enemy again? The primary targets within the U.S. military in Vietnam, the Soviet officials emphasized, were command staff officers, personnel associated with communications, personnel responsible for producing situation analyses, and intelligence officers. General Vaclav Prilchik subsequently reported to Sugina that Soviet General Yepyshev, who headed the main political administration, had told him if the U.S. military were inclined to take drugs, they should, if necessary, be given them free of charge. The money was far less important than influencing the military with drugs. Western intelligence officers, as well as political analysts, have identified 66 as the year when the trafficking of narcotics into Vietnam underwent a marked increase. This would be the year that the Soviet, Czech, North Vietnamese operation became fully operational. By 1967, narcotics had become a serious problem among the U.S. military in Nam. One Soviet KGB intelligence study reported that 90% of U.S. servicemen were using some form of drugs, most commonly marijuana. However, the U.S. military authorities refused to acknowledge the seriousness of the problem until it became so open and blatant that it could no longer be denied. Yeah, that's the way we are, and that's the way we're going to get our butts kicked. The drug challenge was brought out of the closet in 1970, immediately following the secret bombing of Viet Cong sanctuaries in Cambodia. China responded with a stern warning, which Henry Kissinger analyzed in person. He then advised the president as follows. The Chinese have issued a statement, in effect, saying that they wouldn't do anything. But with effect from June 70, heroin of the most pure quality suddenly appeared for sale at below wholesale prices outside the gates of every U.S. installation in Southeast Asia. as General Lewis Walt had explained. In June of 70, immediately after our Cambodian incursion, South Vietnam was flooded with heroin of remarkable purity, 94 to 97%, which sold at the ridiculously low price of first a dollar and then $2 a vial. If profit-motivated criminals were in charge of the operation, the price made no sense at all, because no GI who wanted to get high on heroin would have batted an eyelash at paying 5 or even 10. And the same heroin in New York would cost $250. The only explanation that makes sense is that the epidemic was political rather than economic inspiration. That whoever was behind the epidemic wanted to hook as many GIs as possible, as fast as possible, and as hard as possible. General Walt also made it clear that the trafficking operation appeared to be highly coordinated and centralized, and that some group must have established virtually simultaneous contacts with scores of ethnic Chinese entrepreneurs and other criminal elements throughout South Vietnam. He also examined reports of interrogations of Viet Cong defectors who claimed to have knowledge of large-scale opium production in North Vietnam, and in one case, the Viet Cong involvement in the heroin epidemic. Another defector described the North Vietnamese distribution of drugs as a direct means of undermining the morale and efficiency of U.S. forces. The Vietnam officers with whom Walt discussed the problem were all convinced that the heroin epidemic was political rather than criminal in origin. The result was a mammoth rise in U.S. military drug abuse. While previously there had been 2 deaths per month due to drug abuse, suddenly the stat rose to 60 per month in 1970 and 1971. How many mothers got their sons back thinking they died in combat? The U.S. Air Force lost more people to drugs than to combat. The impact on morale, readiness, and support for a war at home was devastating. During investigations of the new epidemic, Chinese trafficking, North Vietnamese production, and Viet Cong trafficking were all identified by U.S. intelligence. And based on a simple free market economics, one has led to 2 conclusions. First, that the increase was the result of combined, albeit not necessarily coordinated, operations. Secondly, that the trafficking was unquestionably a sign of political warfare and not greed or profit-motivated. The increase in U.S. consumption was driven by supply, not by demand. I'm going to take a break and play a tune. When we come back, I'll be ready to read the rest. Hang in there 1 second.
But not a hot one.
back to a paragraph that I read because it strikes a familiar chord. The result was a mammoth rise in U.S. military drug abuse. While previously there had been 2 deaths per month due to a drug overdose, suddenly the statistic rose to 60 per month. In 1970, 1971, the U.S. Air Force lost more people to drugs than to combat. Now, this is in a confined military situation. Okay, it's not so easy to do these things. Okay, yeah, they can do them on leave, but if you're a junkie, you're bringing you got to have stuff all the time. Now, and you've got MPs and undercover police within military units that are keeping an eye out for just such a thing. Now, you just compare this. This is death by drugs under confinement to the same product hitting the United States, to the free love generation. Can you imagine? If the stats in the military were 60 a month in overdoses in 70 and 71, what were the stats in the United States to overdoses in 70 to 71? Some guys had just experimented with heroin for the first time. One pop and they were dead. One pop and they were dead. So, having said that, with 5 minutes left, and it looks like I finished the chapter, I just got a couple of lines to read you here. And then we'll be setting up for chapter 7 on the next get-together. But notwithstanding the overwhelming evidence concerning the role of China, the White House, as will be explained in Chapter 9, issued instructions in 72 to U.S. government officials telling them that the rumors about Chinese drug trafficking were without substance and should be disregarded. I wonder if that had anything to do with the hugging of Chow and Lai by Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. What did they say? What did the communists say? You have to break a few eggs in order to make an omelet. You can chalk off a couple of kids for the greater good of Chinese-American relations. Chapter 7 will be Moscow intensifies drug war in the late 60s. And let's see what other chapters we got. Chapter 8, Cuba and the rise of narco-terrorism. Chapter 9 is See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Chapter 10, Questions of Intelligence. Chapter 11, Fixing the Responsibility. And the final chapter is 12, Grim Outlook for the 21st Century. Oh, how grim it is. Oh, how grim it is. It is bad. We're in trouble. We're in trouble. And you know what? We're going to stay in trouble until we cut all our bad habits in half. Till we reduce the abortion rate from 1.2 million to 600,000 a year. Till we reduce the drug consumption by half. Till we reduce government spending and waste by half. We are going all to be up the fat lady's burqa. I'm closing with a tune, and it's called Day by Day.
Day by day, I'm falling more in love with you. And day by day, my love seems to grow. There is to my devotion, it's deeper, dear, by far than in the ocean. I find that day by day you're making all my dreams come true. So come what may, I want you to know I'm yours. for making all my dreams come true. So come what may, I want you to know.
Tonight, Mike Savage was playing a tribute to a 10-year-old girl with a voice that's operatic, and he feels that she's going to be a diva, one of the greatest divas of all time. And he played two tunes that she sang. She did one from Madame Butterfly, and then she did the French Christmas song, Noël, Pour la Genou, Temps de Liverance, The Night that Christ Was Born. And I got to tell you that there are two people that stand up for Christianity that are exceptional. They are Christian mensches. And one is Steve Malzberg, and the other one is Michael Savage. And they're to be commended for their love of God and country. So until we meet again, as the Arabs say, when the stick in the sand is equal to its shadow, I think that's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We usually meet at 8 o'clock. If you need help, just fly the cross over Gotham, and the Crusaders will come. I love that word, Crusader. Have a nice night. Take care.